Oh, you gorgeous human being. You're going to really love this interview. I adored it. It's with my friend Abiola Abrahams, and she is an intuitive coach. She is a master of personal transformation. She is the goddess of self-love. She's written multiple books. She has her own oracle decks. And we know each other because we are both part of the Hay House family. This interview for me is so good because Abiola is so honest about her rock bottom moment. So if you are in the middle of a dark night of the soul and don't know how you are going to get through to the other side, you're going to love this interview. I think what she does so powerfully is model in real time how possible it is to go from really eating dirt to trailblazing. So without any further ado, let's get into the episode. Hello, 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 you gorgeous human being. It is Susie Ashworth here, and you are listening to the Infinite Receiving Podcast. And I have got a juicy one for you today. I am so excited to introduce you to my friend and fellow Hay House author, Abiola Abrahams. How the fuck are you, my friend? How are you?
Great, my sister. I am so great and so happy about this conversation.
Yeah, I feel like it's taken a little while to get in the diary, trying to logistically get around all of the time zones. But I am super happy that we have managed to make it work. And
just wait, my sister, wait. In true New Yorker fashion, I must come in there in this moment to celebrate you and say, hello, listeners and viewers. I'm sure you are aware, but wherever you are, let's give a moment of applause for my beautiful sister, and she will receive it because she is the queen of receiving, that she is an international bestseller. Yay for Infinite Receiving. Yay.
Oh, thank you so much. And I think that what you just did epitomizes who you are and the vibe that I got from you the minute that we met in October of last year when we were at the Hay House Mastermind. You're just such a light, and it literally pours out of every single cell of your being. So thank you so much for all of the work that you have had to do in order to be able to show up in the world as you do. And I think that that's probably a glorious place to start, because my desire as an individual is to shine more and more brightly. And I'm curious, when did your work in earnest start? When it came to allowing your light to shine through more brightly?
Ooh, I love the way that you phrased the question and phrased the in saying, you know, the work that you had to do to shine through. And I think that's such an important entry to this conversation, because people will look at, you know, an author like you or a person who's a personality or a person on the internet and say, wow, look at them. It's so easy for them. Of course she can do it. It's easy for her, while discounting themselves. Yeah. And a big part of the work that we do is not about like, well, yay, look at me, I'm so great. It's about you and I and everyone who is watching this. We are one in the same, and we are together on whatever battles, you know. I pray and send love for everyone, for the silent battles that you are fighting, and you know, the battles that you are fighting. And it is about us, you know, seeing the light in each other. And so for me, I feel like I had, as humans do, plenty of periods of start and stop, plenty of periods of having a little bit of light come through, you know, one step forward, three steps back. So it was a lot of that journey for a lot of my life. And a big pivotal moment was that I dated someone who was my college sweetheart for all of my 20s. And then we dated for 10 years and then got married, and it fell apart within months.
Wow.
And we had had this, you know, glorious wedding in the Caribbean with our families. And I spent money that I didn't have on this wedding, you know, went into debt for this wedding and knew all of the words. Like, there's a moment where people are doing self-development work and they know the words, but it hasn't impacted yet. So I knew all of the, you know, that, you know, the marriage is more important than the wedding and, you know, all of those things as concepts, but still was, you know, it wasn't embedded in who I was, you know. And so when that marriage crumbled so quickly, and what felt like publicly, because my family and friends had all been there, you know, months before, and my family at the same time was going through tremendous tragedy. Two of my mom's sisters died within 8 months. Wow. And this was all at the same time that it was happening. Life doesn't stop with one thing to let the other thing happen. And I was so ashamed, so deeply embarrassed, and felt so much that this was a testament of everything that was wrong with me, and just felt like a failure. And rather than tell my family and friends who were grieving and dealing with their own stuff, that, you know, he had cheated on me and that he was emotionally abusive and all of these things, because I felt such deep shame, that I lied to protect him and said, well, I just changed my mind and figured that it was easier for them to think that I was the flake and the a-hole and the jerk and all of those things. And they were furious at me and, of course, and pissed off at me that they had spent a lot of money themselves to come to the Caribbean, to come to the wedding, to celebrate our love. And that, you know, months later, it was not happening and not working. And that for me was a huge shift, a huge moment where I was broken and crying on the kitchen floor and had fallen completely apart. And I was like, okay, things cannot go on like this.
Yeah.
Something has to change. No one is coming to save me. No one is coming. It's me. And I have to figure this out now. Yeah. And so for me, that was a huge, huge moment, even though after that, because we're all still works in progress, there have still been, you know, of course, many challenges. We're people in this earth school, but there's a very clear moment in my life before that and after that, you know?
I am curious about the fact that you were with each other for 10 years, then you got married, and then it lasted just a few months. And it actually took me back to when I was traveling around Thailand around, I was about 20 years old. And interestingly enough, I saw that happen 3 or 4 times. People who had been in long-term relationships, and then they were traveling together on their extended honeymoons, and things were falling apart in front of everybody's eyes. I am curious, did you know before you got married that you were not supposed to be getting married?
100%, my sister. 100%. I said to my best friend, maybe about a month or a couple of months before, and granted, you know, I didn't tell her the whole story, but I said to her, I said, I think this is a bad idea. I don't think this is going to work out. And she said to me, which I probably would have said to her at the time, she said, we all have our dresses. She said, we have our plane tickets already.
And you were like, okay, good point. Let's do this thing.
And what she did not know was that I had, after we had like a bitter fight, my ex and I, and I'd gone to stay with my parents for the weekend and or a week, and come back unexpectedly, and there was a woman's period products in my
bathroom.
And he lied to me and said, oh, that his sister was by, And so I rang up his sister, and it's already, if you have to check on someone, it's already, you're down a bad place. I rang up his sister, and his sister said, "Oh, Harry, how's it going? I haven't seen you guys in a few months. How's everything going?" And so, yeah, it just should not have happened. It just should not have happened. And I take responsibility, even like with all of the stuff of, you know, that of him, because, you know, people are not in a relationship by themselves. I chose him. I was in a relationship with him. He had his own baggage. He had his own issues. I had my own martyrdom and savior complex and feeling that, you know, I could help him. I could fix him. I wasn't worried about fixing myself. I could fix him. I could teach him how to love. I could help him be less broken, all of those kinds of things, you know? And so that is on me, that I made that decision. I was there not by under duress or, you know, no one had kidnapped me and taken me there. I was there. I made a decision to be with this person.
Did you say to him, "Busted, I've just spoken to your sister," or did you not address it?
I did. And he gaslit me and took the conversation not into who was the woman, why was she in my house, why was she using my bathroom. He took the conversation into, why would you have a conversation with my sister about my whereabouts? Why would you not trust me? Why would you do that? Blah, 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 and turned it all completely around to where I then started to apologize.
No.
And said, and yes. Girl, I was down bad. And I would not have believed at the time that, you know, that we can now just laugh about it, you know, that I can now laugh about it because it is in my rearview mirror. So folks, whoever is listening, whatever you are going through, there will be a moment where if you do the work, there will be a moment where you can look back and say, you know, that was not my most shining moment. And here's what I learned from it. And thank goodness it happened. If we were still together, you and I, my beautiful goddess Susie, would not be having this conversation. Yeah. I would not have, oh my God, I would not have been living my dream of being a Hay House author because he thought that that was stupid. He thought that that was beneath him. He thought that that was ridiculous. We wouldn't be here had I stayed with him, had it all worked out the way I thought that it should have worked out at that time. I wouldn't be standing in my truth and I wouldn't be living on purpose. And so thank goodness, what a gift he gave me. Thank goodness to the woman with her tampons in my bathroom. Thank you for that.
You used the word, I was in my martyrdom phase. That was the archetype that you were embodying. What were the biggest lessons that you as the martyr needed to receive from him?
The biggest thing I think that I needed from him as the, well, let me ask this. Do you mean what I know now that I needed from him or what I needed at the time, what I believed at the time that I needed from him?
Oh, I would love to hear both.
All right. So I believe that at the time, as the martyr in the situation, I think that I just needed to hear from him that he felt I was enough, that he felt that I was good enough, because I was contorting myself in every way possible to fit into his ideals. I was, you know, the classic, you know, laughing at the person's jokes that are not funny, which is okay. You know, we do a little bit of that.
No, but it is not okay.
I was deep in, you know, propping him up.
Yeah.
In playing the role of being the ideal girlfriend, the ideal whomever, the ideal, you know, because there were discrepancies in the relationship, like in terms of things that shouldn't matter when you're in love, but, you know, in terms of finances was a big one. And so because he had the earning power in the relationship, I felt like then my role was, as he was the earner of the relationship, rather than thinking of it as a partnership where, you know, in a true partnership, we bring, you know, as with infinite receiving, you know, value is not just in dollars, yeah. not in just dollar signs, you know? But I felt like that was what he brought. So I didn't feel that I brought anything really to the table, because that was a big part of the recurring message of the relationship. Mm. Like, okay, well, why can't you figure your income out? So I felt like very much like, okay, well, I can't raise any concerns about the things that I'm dealing with because I'm not an equal contributing partner to this relationship. So that was the story that I had created and that we created together and that I was living in. And I was living in the story also that as a creative person, that I was just a spiritual person, that I was destined to be poor and broke because I was a starving artist, because I was a spiritual person, a spiritual teacher. So I was destined to be poor and broke because that was my path and that was who I was. And that was intrinsic to even the communities that I was in, you know, the yoga circles that I was in. My friends, like, we prided ourselves on being starving artists. We prided ourselves and looked down on money, and money is bad and evil, and made jokes about, you know, well, you know, our partners, they are, you know, corporate people or whatever, so that we then get to be the creative broke people without realizing that, you know, we are worthy and deserving of the full riches and full abundance. And it is spiritual to make money and it is creative to make money. And money is a resource and money is wonderful. Money is fun. Money is amazing. Money is sexual and sexual and all of the above. We are worthy and deserving of receiving all of it. But that was not the belief system that I had any access to at all. And what I realized after was that I had recreated my parents' relationship dynamic to where my mom, my beautiful, beautiful, loving mom, my beautiful, beautiful, loving dad, I love both of them and I'm fortunate enough to still have them. They are amazing human beings. But I don't believe, in my opinion, that my mother would have been with my father as long as they would have had they not have had a similar financial dynamic.
Got it.
And so I had recreated that because I thought that it was necessary. He was the one who was saving me, is what I, as the martyr, he was saving me. And so I was attempting to save him back by fixing him in ways that he had not asked to be fixed.
It's just interesting for me to hear, because you are so far removed from that human being. So mind, as I'm listening to your story, is like, it's just blowing up here and blowing up there.
And I love that girl. I love that girl. My heart weeps for her, but I love her. I hold her. I love that beautiful girl who felt that she was broken and that this person must save her, and that sure, he was, you know, narcissistic or whatever, or, you know, sure, he had these issues, but I could teach him how to love. Sure, they could, you know, the family would turn on me and be like, you know, why did you break up your relationship? But I'm strong in that way, and I could take it in a way that he couldn't. And so that's okay. I will continue to protect him. You know, like, my heart weeps for that girl, that beautiful, beautiful girl who didn't know that she was a beautiful, beautiful girl.
It's so interesting. I talk about this in Infinite Receiving, knowing your infinite greatness. It's very difficult to see the greatness, true greatness, in somebody else if you can't see it in yourself. So as I hear you speaking, you took the rap for him because there was a part of you that could only see, you didn't see his greatness. You saw him in his victimhood. So I need to protect this little victim when that was never who he was. Anyway, you had your rock bottom moment, and this started you on your journey to the goddess that you are today. What were some of the key insights and practices that you took on board in order to kickstart your healing journey?
Yes. So the first step, if you are in a dark night of the soul, if you are, you know, in a a state of deep grief from a loss of any kind, if you are dealing with, you know, something like to this magnitude, you know, like they say, the only way to it is through it. I had to feel it. Which you don't do when you're in martyrdom, which you don't do when you're in self-judgment. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to really just be like, okay, I allow myself to feel it and do shadow work, do, you know, very heavy shadow work. Look at the parts of myself that I had stuffed down, that I had shut up, that I had said were unlovable, that were, you know, previously unwelcome. You know, I had to look at my people-pleasing issues and challenges and say to myself, okay, well, let's rebuild a grown woman from scratch. Who am I? How did we get here? And how do we create and step into my power and step into my greatness, not in a shallow way? Because again, at that moment, I could have given an amazing motivational speech on a shallow level, you know, given other people advice and coaching and all of that on a shallow level. But let's go deep. Let's go where we are making a cosmic shift, you know, a soul level shift into who I really am, rather than the self that I had been performing.
Yeah.
Rather than the self that I had, the small self that I had been pretending to be, the shrunken, hiding, small self that I was pretending to be. What would it take? What is the gap from this me? This shrunken, hiding me, to me taking up room and owning my voice and owning my presence. And so I had to look at, you know, again, those parts of myself that I was hiding, that I was stuffing down, that were unlovable. A lot of mindfulness, a lot of meditation, a lot of just sitting with myself, sitting with my spirit guides and being present, allowing myself to be radically present, allowing myself to take responsibility and shift out of blame. You know, where it's easy in a relationship where you can look at, you know, the a person being, you know, emotionally abusive or whatever it is, you can look at those things and say, okay, that person's a very clear, you know, jerk or a-hole or whatever. You can look at those things, but where do you take responsibility?
Yeah,
because if you can't take responsibility for who you are and the choices that you made, how do you move forward? You know, you have to be able to say, okay, I chose that. I did that. I own that. What are my lessons here and why?
What do you think? What part of you did you most need to integrate? So what was the part of you that you were stuffing down the most?
The part that I was stuffing down the most was fear of outshining the tribe.
Ooh.
Fear of shining brightly. Yeah.
It's that classic Marianne Williamson quote. It's not that you're afraid of failure, but you're afraid of just how successful you might be. Yes. Where did you learn that it wasn't safe for you to shine as brightly as you desired?
Very much in my childhood. Because I had been, you know, I had the fortune of a good fortune of having parents who were very involved and excited about my education. Mm-hmm. And so I had been in a lot of like gifted child classes and that sort of thing that then caused me to be bullied and rejected by, you know, my peers. And I had learned very quickly that in order to be likable, that I couldn't bring my whole self to the table was what the messaging that I got from various, you know, situations, even from certain people, you know, in my extended family, you know, that in order to be likable, that there had to be, you know, parts of myself, you know, that I had to leave behind.
Sure.
That I had to stuff down, that I had to not take up as much room, that I had to, you know, so that the goal for me as a young girl and as a young woman, I thought was being likable rather than owning my voice and owning myself and walking in my truth.
What did you notice when you started to bring those parts of you or that part of you online? What was your lived experience of that?
The beautiful thing was that I realized first it wasn't as scary as I thought that it would be. The second thing is that for some people, yes, you will be too much. For some people, yes, I am too much. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Those are not your people. We're not saying that, you know, by owning your voice and owning your truth that suddenly, oh, magically, you know, everyone is going to be your biggest advocate or fan. They don't have to be. Who cares? Mm-hmm. I'm my biggest advocate and fan, you know? And so walking in my truth and owning my voice. And then the biggest, I guess, biggest thing was realizing that I still get to be me who genuinely loves and cares about people and is deeply compassionate and excited about people. I thought that, you know, that there were two different things, that it was either because I saw visually, like people seem to either be jerks who didn't care about people or the people who cared about people and they were the ones getting stepped on and walked over. And I thought that, you know, well, as a person who is naturally someone that loves and is compassionate about people and empathetic and all of those things, that naturally that I had to be in the other camp, and realizing that I get to be my whole self. And own my voice and walk the path in the way that I need to is wonderful and liberating and exciting in so many ways.
When you think about your mission and your vision for the world, how much of that has always been present, or has this been something that you have developed since you gave yourself permission to own all of yourself?
Oh, it's always all been present. It has always all been present, mm-hmm. you know, fully and completely, you know, and shown up in different aspects, you know, throughout my life. But the shift is in owning myself and in owning my voice, I am now able to really make impact, because as a teacher, a leader of any kind, a coach, whatever language you use, you know, in order to define your path, I know we're talking to a room of leaders. You can only bring people as far as you've gone yourself. And so when I was at surface level, I was only able to bring people to surface level transformation, surface level healing, and, you know, not able to take people on a deep transformational journey because I had not gone there myself.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, having been through the fire, you know, that I am now able to really make shift happen.
And what is the goal? Why do we want shift to happen?
Yes, my vision for us as human beings is that everyone is able to be their most realized version of themselves, whatever that means for them. You know, it's completely different for each one of us. That is the design of the world. But it's that people are able to manifest their power, to step into their truth, to own their greatness, to feel like the most fulfilled version of themselves. And the beautiful thing is that that means something completely different to each and every one of us. But whatever that is, that we are not on our deathbed saying, oh my gosh, I wish I would have. I wish I could have. Why did I? We're able to live without regrets and really, really ride this thing until the wheels fall off, as they say.
I love that so much. I'm curious about your tools. Your body of work is broad and wide and deep, and it is very inspiring. And I do want to talk about the books, but before we talk about the books, I also want to talk about the deck. I know I adore Oracle cards for helping me tap more into my intuition, helping me tap more into my own wisdom and knowledge. And I'm curious about the deck that you have just launched and what your intention is for the people who are using it, how you want us to be using it to tap into our own intuition.
Yes. So the deck that just launched, my sister, is named the Secrets of the Ancestors Oracle Deck. And this deck has many different levels at which a person could enter into a relationship with it, because you're having a relationship with any deck. For my deck practitioners who are out there, it's a relationship that you are having. And so some people will use the Secrets of the Ancestors Oracle deck as a traditional Oracle deck, maybe pulling a card once a day for guidance, to find out where they are as a kind of barometer or thermometer of what is going on in their lives. Another level that people can use this deck at is to use the spreads to do deeper readings, to be able to see a map at that moment of what is going on in their psyche and where they are going on a particular journey in their lives. You say you want to look into relationships or your money or your business or whatever it is. So that's another level. Then a completely different level with this deck that I'm so excited about is that this deck is also a communication tool between the user, the reader, the person that's using the deck, and their ancestors. And so this, if you are wanting to use it at that level as an ancestral connection and communication tool, it is available to you in that way to be able to connect with your ancestors, you know, bringing your intuitive gifts and intuitive guidance and allowing yourself to have access to your ancestral wisdom is a tremendous and wonderful gift. We are still living out the prayers that someone whose name we may never know prayed for us. And how magnificent to be able to connect with that energy. Energy cannot be created or destroyed. It always exists. Science says that. Religion says that. Spirituality says that. And so the dead are not dead. The folks that we once loved or that we never knew have not left us. And so being able to connect with their energy is a big part of the journey that someone could take with the Secrets of the Ancestors Oracle deck.
What I am curious about is the word trust. And so it's super helpful that you introduce the science and that piece around energy, because I think that grounds a lot of people who are like, hang on a minute, what do you mean I can speak to my ancestors, or how am I going to understand that this is part of my psyche? So I love that piece around the energetics. And there's a piece around, if I pull this card and I intuitively, like, I sense a message, how do I know that that message is the message? And so much of being able to tap into your deeper wisdom and guidance internally and universal comes from you trusting what comes up for you. And so for the people that aren't quite there yet, they want to be there, but they aren't quite there yet. Yes. What do you say to them about trust?
So trust, belief, faith are all sisters. They are all, you know, different sides of a multidimensional coin. And if you are wanting to have a relationship with your ancestors, then trusting that there is a way for you to do so is a beautiful thing. However, it is not, I just want to just say this to just let everyone off the hook. It is not necessary that you have a relationship with your ancestors. So if for you that you are like, okay, well, this is not for me, I'm not in the convincing business. I say that to people all the time. If it's not for you, it's not for you. Yeah. But for those who are in between and wanting to know more, let me speak to you for a moment. There was a time I remember where I was deathly afraid, terrified of cards, tarot, anything having to do with that. I wanted nothing to do with it. It seemed like it kept on trying to follow me, and I was terrified of it. I wanted nothing to do with it at all. And it was very interesting. My first experience with tarot actually was in a mall in Atlanta in the US, And my I was with the same ex that we were just talking about, and a woman was reading cards. And I don't remember how, because again, I was terrified of cards, but somehow I felt like, okay, I needed to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down, and she, you know, we did the, I don't remember what she did, but she pulled cards. And then she looked at my ex and she said, I need to speak with her alone.
No.
And I remember she told, yes. So he was annoyed, but then he eventually walked off, sulked off. And she told me that the relationship was not going to work out and that there was betrayal and there was deception and all of these things. And I was like, oh my God, I knew I shouldn't have spoken to this woman. And she's cursed my relationship. And oh my goodness. And so in terms of the future telling, fortune telling, fearful aspect of, you know, cards, I want to just talk to that for a moment. What any reading of tarot or oracle cards are doing is that they are giving you a snapshot of what is true at that moment with everything playing out the way that it is if things continued on that course. You are the only person who has agency in your life. I'm going to say that again. You are the only person who has agency in your life. And so a reading or a person who is doing a reading or you doing a reading yourself is a snapshot. It is like a map. It's a GPS. If you look at a GPS at any given time, it's showing you where you are. But you, if you change and go around the corner, it's going to show you something different because of the situation and the conditions have changed. And so if you are wanting to be in contact, use your gifts in this way to have, you know, a deeper connection to the divine for purposes of personal development and evolution, then this is a beautiful way to be able to do it. The question of, you know, how can I trust this? How can I believe this? Comes up all the time, even without cards, that people will say to me, how can I trust that my inner voice, that the guidance that I'm getting, that I feel like I'm receiving, how do I know if it's my voice versus, you know, God's voice? How do I know that it is real? You know, how do I know? And the truth is that you will feel like you are making it up in the beginning. You will feel like you're making it up. You will feel like, oh my gosh, am I making this up? The voice of the divine, God, the universe, whatever term, you know, floats your boat, because, you know, God is less picky about names than we are. The voice of the divine will never belittle you, will never try to make you feel small, will never say to you, oh, that's such a stupid thing that you did. Oh, why would you do that? It will never in any way speak to you or approach you to make you feel less than. The voice of the divine will only guide you and say, oh, okay, let's go down this road. Okay, let's try that. Oh, we don't want to do that. Oh, all right, this is a chaotic moment. Okay, how are you going to deal with it? It's going to give you advice from a place of love. Never fear. Even if it is tough advice, like this woman said to me, and she absolutely ended up being completely right. You know, even if it is tough love advice, it'll be from a place, from an energy of love, not fear. And I talk about the science of it all the time for that reason, because I know that people have these challenges. And so it's fun to me to look at the ways that science is catching up with spirituality.
Yeah. Before we came on live, we were laughing about the fact that you are actually, in fact, in witness protection right now because you have missed the deadline for your latest book, which is coming out next year. But before that, you have a book that is coming out in the 24th of May. Can you give us the title of that and what it is that you're sharing with the world?
Yay! So this is this beautiful book, which is named From Imagination to Reality, Secret Manifestation Lessons and the Law of Assumption from Abdullah, Master Alchemist. So I am so excited about this book because, well, let me tell you first who Abdullah is. So about 100 years ago, Susie, in New York City, Abdullah was a person who did what we do. He was a spiritual teacher who lived in New York City, and he was a Black Ethiopian rabbi. And he taught some of the people, the teachers of the teachers of the teachers that we talk about today. So he was a teacher to Neville Goddard and Dr. Joseph Murphy and others. And so a lot of the things, the foundations of what we know to be personal development and manifesting and the law of attraction and the secret and all of those things, he was the source of all of that knowledge and information at that time. Yes. And I am honored that I feel that he chose me to help to bring forward. A big part of my work is bringing forward ancestral knowledge, that he chose me to help to bring forward these teachings. And so I'm so excited to be able to share this, because we all deserve infinite receiving. We all deserve to manifest and create the things that we want, that we desire. You deserve your heart's desire. You deserve it. If it's, you know, a red dress that you feel like, you know, you may feel like, well, how does it benefit the universe and the world that I'm wearing a red dress? Everything is a chain. Everything is a chain. That for every, again, science, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. You don't know how. We never know how all of the dots connect. So maybe it's just you feeling so divine and so sexy and so wonderful in your red dress, that the way that you go out and impact people in the world. Maybe it's someone across a restaurant who looks and says, wow, that looks like my sister. I need to call her. And they call their sister and blah, blah, blah. Like, we have no idea all of the touch points, but everything that your heart desires, as the wonderful Rumi said, what you are seeking is seeking you. And so you stepping into your power, where you are able to manifest and bring forward the things that you are wanting, desiring, this is it's your birthright. It's your birthright. And so that's what this book is. This book is a manual with lessons on exactly how to do so.
I am so excited to be able to read your book and support your work. And yes, it's amazing. And also just thank you for sharing from the source. It's beautiful and important work. I'm curious, how do you find the writing process?
Well, my first art is as a writer. And so my father was a self-published writer when I was a kid. And my mom is a writer who hasn't published anything yet, but I'm trying to convince her. Hopefully she will. My sister is a writer. My love language is words of affirmation. So writing has always been my first gift. Actually, before I was blessed enough to be working in the world of personal development, I've had every job as a writer that exists. I used to write for a gossip website named Yahoo OMG. I was on the Kardashian beat, and I had to come up with as many stories about the Kardashians as possible. So channeling the words and the gifts of Abdullah is much more in alignment with my heart and my soul and the gift of writing that I feel that I've been given by my ancestors.
I love it. And I just have to say, I feel like, going right back to the start of the conversation, the light that I see comes from you. Part of that is the fact that you get to live your passion. You know, you get to live the teachings, but you're also living your passion. And that's part of the manifestation. That's part of the ride. It's part of the living of life. And you're such a beautiful model for that. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, my sister. Thank you. I feel just so blessed and so lucky. Like, I really do, like, every day say, oh my goodness, as I'm sure you do. Like, yay, thank God. God bless this life. Thank you.
Yeah, I do. And I get it. And I see it all over your face. It is beautiful. Right. I'm conscious that we are coming up to the end of our time. So I want to ask you my infinite receiving questions that I ask all of my guests. My first question is, what does infinite receiving mean to you?
Oh my goodness. Infinite receiving is our birthright, and it means aligning ourselves with the vibration and frequency of this world that wants us to receive everything. Giving and receiving are two ends of the same coin. And if you are in giving, without receiving the martyrdom archetype mm-hmm. that we were talking about, then you are out of balance with who you were born to be.
Yeah. How good are you at receiving infinitely?
I, at this moment, can say that I am good at receiving and getting better.
Yeah.
And getting better every day. Getting better every day. Opening my heart and my soul and my energy, especially as the mommy of a 2-year-old little girl who wants her to be an infinite receiver. I have to go first. So I'm getting better at it every day.
I love. Who in your life or where in your life can you allow a little bit more love in?
Very interesting answer came to me. Not what I would have thought that I would answer, but I will just say it anyway. I think that I need to allow in more love from my amazing parents while I have them, you know, like,
beautiful.
My parents.
What is your greatest attribute?
Oh, greatest attribute. I think that I genuinely like people. Yeah, I like people. Yeah.
I love
people. My sister, she will say that to me all the time, like kind of like it's just a sister thing, like in a derogatory way. Yeah, but you really like people. Like, I'm like, yeah, I do.
What is one thing that you are consciously manifesting right now?
Ooh, I am consciously, as a New Yorker who does not drive and who a big fear that I had of been terrified of driving, but I'm leaving that in the dust and now live somewhere where I must drive. I am manifesting a new car.
Yay. I'm holding it with you. And final question. Where in your life can you allow yourself to be more supported, or who in your life can you allow to support you just a little bit more?
I can allow myself to be more supported in terms of, well, this is interesting. I would say in terms of my business, being able to allow myself to have a strong team that is a real and capable team. Yeah. To be able to travel the road that I know that I must travel in order to bring my message further in a big way, allow myself to be supported in the way that I deserve, and that my audience and my peoples, my students, my everyone deserves. That is another manifestation that we are calling forward.
Yeah. Aviola, it has been such a pleasure. Can you please share with my people, where can they find more of you and your brilliant work, and remind us when the book is going to be out again?
Yes. So first of all, thank you, Goddess Susie. This conversation today has filled my heart and filled my soul. It's been a good, tasty meal that I have fully enjoyed. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that. You can find me throughout social media, Instagram, Facebook, etc., at Abiola TV. TV stands for Transformation and Victory. Yeah. And you can find me on YouTube at Planet Abiola. My podcast, The Goddess Temple Podcast, is available wherever podcasts are. And I have a free gift. Oh my goodness, that actually I just thought of is so in alignment with what you are doing. It's named The Goddess of Receiving Workbook. That I've had for years. And so the Goddess of Receiving Workbook, if you go to my site, womanifesting.com, like manifesting.com, but womanifesting.com, you can download your free Goddess of Receiving Workbook. And the book, which actually I just received it, and it has the website is incorrect on here, but that's okay. All right. So don't go to the website here. Go to womanifesting. It's missing an I. All right. But the book, From Imagination to Reality, is coming at the end of May, but you can pre-order it right now. So if you are listening to this, so that you don't forget, go right now and order From Imagination to Reality if it feels in alignment with you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. We will make sure that we have all of the links to all of the things on the show notes. And yeah, thank you. You're beautiful, you're amazing, and it's been a real pleasure and a joy. If you have loved listening to this episode as much as I have enjoyed it, then do me a favor. Please share this with one other incredible human that you know would benefit from these beautiful words of wisdom, from this frequency of light and abundance that is just overflowing from this episode. And in the meantime, please remember that faith plus action equals miracles.